Materialist is someone who believes that reality itself is constituted by nothing except matter. Or, to be slightly more precise, nothing except atoms and the void through which the atoms move. Saying that suggests immediately, of course, that he was an anti-Platonist. Plato believes that the forms are real, the idea of the good is real, and neither the forms nor the idea of the good are material. Once again, we have a basic disagreement. Hobbes knew very well that he was criticizing ancient philosophers. He devotes a whole chapter, chapter 46, of his book, The Leviathan, to a critique of ancient philosophy, specifically on this issue of immaterial substance, something real that's not material. Hobbes was also what's known as a social contract theorist. A social contract theorist is someone who believes that human beings originally, in what came to be known as the state of nature, were not political. And according to Hobbes, in the state of nature, before there was government, state, politics, in the state of nature, human beings were completely free. This sounds very good, except for the fact that in the state of nature, because we were so free, one of the things we did in the state of nature was go after other people's property. The state of nature, in fact, as Hobbes describes it, was a war of all against all. Everybody is competing against everybody else, trying to outdo everybody else. There is no government. There are no inhibitions. There are no constraints on human acquisitiveness or human freedom. The life in the state of nature, according to Hobbes in a famous phrase, is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. Therefore, what people did, and this, of course, is a theoretical principle, it's not a historical fact, what people did was engage in a social contract. They made a kind of deal. They created a government, and the government would restrict their freedom. And this is a loss. The gain, and a contract implies loss and gain, the gain was security. In the state of nature, I always had to be afraid of you because there was nothing to stop you from punching me in the nose and taking my property. One can't do that when there is a government. The government puts a clamp on our behaviors and doesn't allow us to do everything we want to do. Again, loss and gain. It's rational, in short, for human beings to give up some of their freedoms in exchange for security. I hope that sounds a bit familiar. It should remind you of what Glaucon says at the beginning of Book 2 of the Republic, because there he suggests that justice is not good for itself. You recall perhaps that Glaucon identifies three different kinds of good things. Some good things are good for themselves. Some good things are not good for themselves, but bring good consequences. An example would be a very bad tasting medicine that has a good effect. Some good things are good for themselves and for their consequences. And there Glaucon says, most people believe that justice is number two. It's not good in itself. It's only good for its consequences. That's a version of the social contract theory. Not only Hobbes, but John Locke, Rousseau, John Rawls, these are famous names in the history of social contract theory. They could all be construed, without too much exaggeration, as footnotes to Book 2 of Plato's Republic. Let me mention next Immanuel Kant, 1724 to 1804. Kant was almost certainly the greatest single philosopher of the modern age. He was surely the greatest single moral philosopher in modernity. He wrote a book titled The Groundwork of the Metaphysics of Morals, which is still taught today. It's taught in almost every introductory ethics course in almost every American university. Kant developed the concept of what he called the categorical imperative. Without going into any detail, what the categorical imperative is an absolute demand for moral action. A categorical imperative is categorical, meaning no ifs, ands, or buts. So the famous example that Kant gives of the categorical imperative is the prohibition against lying. One should not lie under any circumstances, even circumstances as dire as the one he imagines. Imagine there was a murderer on the loose, and he was chasing somebody, and this person came to your house and said, "Please, give me shelter." Okay, you would say, "You can hide it in my basement." A few minutes later, the murderer knocks on your door and says, "Is there somebody hiding in your basement?" This will not sound too plausible, but Kant would say, you are not morally permitted to lie even in those circumstances. That, again, is what is meant by the categorical imperative. It's an absolute demand on moral action. I mentioned the example, of course, because it puts us into conversation with Socrates. For Socrates, lying goes to the heart of politics. There could be, Socrates suggests, no city that didn't lie. This is the famous noble lie. And Socrates tells other lies. Perhaps you recall that in the attempt to regulate sexual reproduction, he fabricates a lottery. He tells people it's a matter of chance, whereas in fact, it's a matter of design. Kant was a great believer in human dignity and individual autonomy. Kant was an egalitarian. He believed that every human being, simply by virtue of the fact that he or she was human, deserved respect, deserved to be treated with dignity. I would remind you in this context of Socrates' medical ethics. I made much of this precisely in order to suggest the kind of contrast with a philosopher like Kant. For Socrates, my example, perhaps you recall, was of a 90-year-old man in the hospital. For Socrates, all human beings are not created equal. All human beings do not deserve equal amount of respect. The 90-year-old in the hospital, perhaps, says Socrates, shouldn't even be given health care because it's a drain on resources, resources that could be rationally allocated somewhere else. For example, the treatment of a healthy person who suffers a broken arm or has a virus. That's a good use of medical resources because such a person gets back to work. The 90-year-old is never going back to work. To put it very cruelly, let's let that man die. That's the Socratic motto. Kant would absolutely disagree. Again, we have a conversation. John Stuart Mill lived from 1806 to 1873, and he's often thought to be the greatest British philosopher of the 19th century. He wrote many books on many subjects. I'll mention only one, On Liberty. This is the crucial text for modern liberalism. Liberalism is a bit of a dangerous word because the way we use liberal in contemporary political discourse is not what someone like Mill has in mind. A liberal, in Mill's sense, is someone who identifies liberty as the fundamental principle of political and moral life. According to Mill, the only justification for restricting the liberty of anyone is to prevent that person from harming or restricting the liberty of someone else. Very familiar ideas to us. It goes without saying that these ideas are the antithesis of the Republic. The Republic is not a place which values liberty in this sense. To use another word, freedom, the Republic is not a place where freedom is a paramount concern. Let me put the point in the following way. According to Mill, if the law doesn't say you can't do it, then it's okay to do it. I can do anything I want as long as the law doesn't prohibit it. For Plato, it's quite different. I think the Platonic response would be, you can only do what the law tells you to do. A basic difference indeed. Mill would justify his liberalism by arguing that the liberation of individual talents leads to great progress, and the position could not be further from the one embraced by Socrates. Mill also, in another book titled Utilitarianism, also with Kant, although for different reasons, argues that lying is just fundamentally wrong. Mill argues not by means of a categorical imperative, but in terms of the consequences of lying. If I lie to you and you discover I've lied to you, our relationship will be plagued by distrust and insecurity. And that's a bad thing. And that's why, according to Mill, we shouldn't lie. So once again, even though he disagrees with Kant's reasoning, he joins Kant in criticizing Socrates' noble lie. Karl Marx lived from 1818 to 1883. He was the major source of inspiration for all forms of modern social radicalism, especially in the 20th century. I'll mention just a couple of points which make contact with Plato's Republic. Marx was famous for arguing on behalf of the abolition of private property. You recall, of course, that this is a feature of the life of the Guardians. They have no private property. For much the same reason, Marx would deny private property in order to foster social solidarity, to foster communism. We live in common. A disagreement with Socrates would be that Marx also advocated the abolition of classes and class distinctions. By contrast, of course, Socrates is adamant about keeping the city stratified, gold, silver, and bronze. Again, and I'm certain Marx did read Plato, I'm not certain that he was explicitly commenting on the Republic when he wrote Capital, but he certainly knew Plato was in the background. He's in a dialogue with Plato. On the one hand, to go back to Whitehead's quote, it's absurd to label these great thinkers as mere footnotes to Plato. They do, however, all take up themes that Plato first explored. And this is, I hope, a fitting way for us to end this course. With disagreement and with dialogue, we've just seen how this very small sampling of Western political philosophers disagrees, takes up issues against Plato's Republic, but in doing so, they bring it to life. And that has been my own objective in teaching this course, which I hope you've enjoyed.
We genuinely hope you've enjoyed these lectures from our Great Courses series. Our courses are available to order online. Visit our website at www.teachone2.com or call our customer care representatives at 1-800-TEACH-1-2. That's 1-800-TEACH-1-2. Thank you very much.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.